Welcome to the Game Mystery Podcast, featuring interviews with some of the most renowned authors and up-and-coming talent in LGBTQ mysteries, suspense, and thrillers. I'm your host, Brad Shreve, and Justine Adamick is here with her weekly recommendation. Justine, I think we're on the air.
We are on the air. That would be terrific.
Yes, we are on the air. And we got quite a few things to cover in a short amount of time because I want to get to your review.
Excellent.
So the first thing I want to comment about is, as people that are listening probably already know, I changed the name of the show. It is now Gay Mystery Podcast. And people have asked why. There's a slew of reasons why. But in the end, we'll just say because I wanted to.
Okay.
And that's what it comes down to. Now,
it works for me.
It works for you. Works for me, too. Now, for those of you that listen on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, any of those podcast applications, nothing changes. All of a sudden, you'll just notice the name change and the logo changes. However, if you listen to the show on the website and you have it saved in your favorites bar, instead you're going to find the old site, and it'll throw you over. So just change your favorites bar the link to gamemysterypodcast.com. There we go.
And you're going to do this every few months just to keep them on their toes?
Maybe we'll do it once more. But by then, everybody will figure it out.
Okay.
Oh, you mean to change the name?
Yeah.
No. In fact, I'm gonna make a comment about changing the name.
Okay.
I am, and we are, both of us are open to comments and suggestions at any time. We'd love to hear from y'all. And we have a phone number that you can call. The number is 424-328-1008. And if you call, just leave your first name, where you're from, and your comment, and maybe we'll put you on the air. The only thing I'm going to say, I have one rule, no recommendations for name change. Done.
Oh no,
I'm not doing it again. It was a hassle.
So, I know. I bet if they come up with a really clever one, you might be tempted.
Well, yeah, if they come up with something amazing, I might be tempted, but it was more of a hassle than I thought.
Yes.
So anyway, you have something to tell us about that. It was a Christmas present to us.
Well, Neil Plaxey, who is your interview today, posted a review for us on Christmas as our Christmas present.
And what was it that he said?
Great interviews. Brad Shreve does a terrific job with his interviews on this new podcast of Gay Mystery Authors. I've learned more about the genre and enjoyed the insights into his guest authors. And Justine's reviews are, I can't even hardly say it. And Justine's reviews are a hoot, too.
And you know what? He's right. You are a hoot. And I love having you on the show, and I'm glad you're a part of it.
Well, thanks very much. I have a lot of fun doing this.
Well, good. Well, thank you for being a hoot.
Yeah. We can call it the Hoot Nanny Show next.
Well, maybe we will. I think that might be taken.
Oh, well. Oh, well. But we could be
I bet there's not a Hoot Nanny Mystery Show.
Or a gay Hoot Nanny Show.
There you go. I don't know. There might be one of those.
Okay.
Anyway, let's get to your review. Who are we talking about today?
We're talking about Mark Zuber, one of my favorite authors. And he's been writing a bunch of young adult books over the last year and a half. But he finished up, I think he's finished up his Paul Turner series in 2017. 12 books. And of those 12 books, 7 were finalists for the Lambda Literary Award.
Yeah, I'm glad you're doing Mark Zuber finally, because he is one of the greats.
Yeah, he's had 8 nominations in all, including the 7 for the Paul Turner books, and he has 1 win for one of his other books. So he is really one of the giants in the industry. It's a series of his that I like the best. Paul is a Chicago cop. He's gay. He has 2 sons. He was married to a woman, and she died shortly after the birth of the second son. The younger son has spina bifida and is in a wheelchair. And over the course of the books, you see the boys grow up to young children, to Brian is a senior in high school, and Jeff becomes a teenager. He's very smart, but has to deal with his disability. So somewhere in the series, he falls in love and marries an auto mechanic who owns his own shop. named Ben Vargas. And by book 12, they are a contented family, and book 12 doesn't contain very much of his home life. It shows generally how supportive they are and how much they worry about him, but there aren't any subplots of the family. He has a next-door neighbor called Mrs. Tolucci. Mrs. Tolucci is a 90-year-old small Italian woman who rules over the neighborhood, sits out on the porch knitting with a shotgun across her lap. And if you cross Mrs. Tolucci, various unnamed young men will show up and do bad things. And when there's trouble, she calls somebody and occasionally you get some help. And that is all there is to say about the mysterious Mrs. Tolucci. Book 12, it's a little convoluted. So I'm going to lay out the plot for you and then I'm just going to set you to go.
Is convoluted the right word or complicated?
No, it's convoluted.
Okay.
So there's a little short introduction before it starts, and it says, you know, you've seen the shootings of young black men, and what would happen if Paul Turner and his partner Fenwick showed up and, you know, to one of these shootings? And what happens is Fenwick and Turner show up and discover one of their fellow detectives with his gun trained on a young black kid. I mean, he's about 14, 15. And they stop the shooting. Fenwick tackles the kid to the ground and Turner tases the cop. And this is all captured on cell phone video. And they're all, you know, heroes. Then there's also a confluence in town. And, you know, it's not a conference, it's a confluence. A number of different groups all being brought together for the purpose of dialogue. And they're setting up tent cities and the like. And two of the activists on each of the sides, the far right and the far left, they're meeting on a rooftop and they're both killed by a sniper. They get up there and they discover the taser, which Paul Turner had dropped at the side of the shooting on the roof, wiped the fingerprints and in a plastic bag. So now these two unassociated things have become associated. And Ring of Silence refers to the Code of Silence, and the Code of Silence comes to surround the cop who was going to shoot the kid and against Turner and Fenwick. That all happens in the first chapter and a half, and then they untangle it.
That's 1.5 chapters?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's quite the beginning.
See, it was a little convoluted. But I got to tell you, he picks it all up. He does not miss a step. There's no plot holes. It's just wonderful. And I think Neil Plotsky is the one who edited it.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Nope. Yeah, and I'm just realizing that, because what a coincidence that he is your guest. And we just read a review by him.
Yeah, Neil is a college professor, so it wouldn't surprise me if he did the editing.
Yep, Neil Plaxi did the editing.
And I got to tell you, the interview with Neil's fun. But anyway, I don't want to interrupt you with the review.
This is an intriguing recommendation.
An intriguing recommendation. That's last week was intriguing too, I think.
I think so. I like those intriguing recommendations.
Yes, they're good.
Those are some of my favorites.
I would agree.
And to this week, let me just throw in a quick plug. Recruit Tales is released In the Game by Nikki Baker, the first in the Virginia Kelly series. Virginia Kelly is the first Black lesbian main character in a gay mystery novel. And we're thrilled to be publishing her.
And I always say I'm going to buy those books. And I bought that book the day it came out. I can't wait to read it. It's a historical keepsake. So I want to have it.
Excellent. Looking forward to it. Okay. Well, on with your interview.
Neil S. Plaxi is the author of 30 mysteries and romance novels, including the highly acclaimed Mahu series. The 12th book in that series is Deadly Labors, which debuted October 1st, 2019. And lucky number 13 will be Soldier Down, will be out this spring. He can be found almost every morning at a Starbucks drinking a cafe mocha and tapping away at his laptop. He is a professor of English at Broward College in South Florida, where he lives with his husband and their rambunctious golden retrievers. Welcome to the show, Neil.
Thank you very much for having me, Brad.
It's a pleasure. Now, before we do anything, Neil, I want to bring up your last name in case any of our listeners want to look you up during the show. It's pronounced It's pronounced Plaxi, but if they search if they search for you, it's spelled
Plaxy.
There we go.
In the Russian alphabet, there's no letter X, but there is a C and an S. So when my grandfather and his 11 siblings came here from Russia, they spelled the name the way they were accustomed to spelling it, which has made nothing but problems for me ever since.
I can imagine. Well, to start off, you've written over 30 novels, which is impressive. We're going to start with the Mahu series, which is what I've known you most for, and your most recent novel. Tell us about that series.
You know, it's interesting. I began working on Mahu after visiting Hawaii in 1992. My father had passed away and my mother inherited his frequent flyer miles. And I had a whole bunch from companies where I had worked. So we said, let's go on a big trip to Hawaii. And it'll be our, you know, one big visit to these islands. And I really fell in love with the place. And I realized that Hawaii has a lot of the things that I love about South Florida as well. It's a beautiful, sunny, tropical place, but it's also a place where there's lots of shady characters in that behind those sunny facades. It's also very remote. And so it's an edge place. It's a place where people go, you know, we want to run away from things quite often. So the islands really took hold of me. I had just finished my Master of Fine Arts in Creative Writing at Florida International University. And all of my professors and most of my classmates were writing Florida thrillers. And I despaired of finding any corner of South Florida that I could write about that somebody else hadn't already claimed. And I had read so many of those Florida mysteries, and that's how I learned about this place that I loved. So I delved into looking for Hawaii mysteries to learn about the place in the same way. And I discovered that at least back then, there were very few. So I said, oh, maybe I'll write the book that I want to read. And I'll write a mystery that has all the elements of a Florida book, but set it in Hawaii. And I began that, and I got about 200 pages in, and then I went to a writer's conference with my graduate school thesis advisor and gave him the first 50 pages or so to read. And the first thing he asked me was, how much of this have you already written? And I said, about 200 pages, and his face fell. And you know, that's never good news. And the problem was that my hero was an ex-cop who was a surfer private eye. And my thesis advisor asked me, why did your private eye leave the police force? And I said, I don't know, you know, didn't like working under authority. He said, that's not good enough. Go back and think about the guy and then, you know, what his process was. And I was going through my own coming out process within, you know, a couple of years after that. And I came back to that manuscript and said, oh, okay, my hero's gay. And that's why he left the police force to be a private eye. And I realized, though, that I had to write the book in which he comes out of the closet and deals with those ramifications. By the end of that book, however, he told me, I'm not a quitter. I'm not the kind of guy who's going to dump my valued career protecting and serving the people of Hawaii with aloha and go to be a private eye. So that's how I've been stuck writing police procedurals for the last 20 years.
Police procedurals are tough for me. That's why I stick with private detectives. I don't have to follow the rules.
And, well, you know, one of the things that I do like about writing about the police is that I'm a very logical step-by-step writer. Mm-hmm. And so the framework of the police investigation tells me where I need to go with the plot. And so, okay, he's got to go to the scene of the crime. He's got to go interrogate witnesses. He's got to talk to the medical examiner and so on. And so that process is already there as a framework, which you don't often have with an amateur sleuth or a private eye. And then I find that the character development happens in the in-between spaces between those steps of the police investigation.
Yes, and you had mentioned to me before part of the growth of your character is the coming out process.
Yes, and so again, when I wrote the first book, I didn't realize it was going to be a series. I actually wrote book three, Mahu Fire, next. And then I realized, oh, he had some more growing to do between book one and that book. So I went back and wrote Mahu Surfer, and they were published in the correct order. It's just, it took me a while to figure out what I was writing. And so in the first book, he gets dragged out of the closet, has to deal with the ramifications for his family and his friends. Then in book two, he starts to make some gay friends and develop a sense of his own identity and the history of, you know, gay people and the situation of gay people around him. Then in book three, then that's when he's ready to start meeting a boyfriend, falling in love, and so on. So I found that going through the series for a long time, it was paralleling what was going on in my own life. And then after that, then he had enough of his own identity that he was ready to go on and do some things that I haven't done.
And your protagonist's name is?
Kimo Kanapa'aka. And I guarantee you, if I had known I was going to be writing 13 books, I would have given him a much simpler name.
Well, for my benefit, we're going to keep it simple and just call him Kimo.
I think that's great.
Now, as I said earlier, the latest in the Mahu series is Deadly Labors, which released just a few months ago.
Yes.
Can you give us some details about that novel?
Sure. Ooh, 5, 6, 7 years ago, maybe, I took the FBI Citizens Academy, which is a 9-week program offered by the FBI, one evening a week, to introduce citizens to the functions of the Bureau. And I was really fascinated, and I was really interested in that, and I decided they have a thing called the Joint Terrorism Task Force, in which they bring in local cops from all different jurisdictions. They'll have somebody from the Coast Guard. They'll have somebody from the local police. They'll have somebody from every other jurisdiction or division to work together on a terrorism task force. And so I thought, wouldn't it be cool to, I'd gotten tired of solving mysteries in one neighborhood of one city. Because that's the flip side, or that's a negative side of writing the police procedural, is Kimo works in District 1 on the island of Oahu, city of Honolulu, but only certain neighborhoods. So anytime that I had him involved in a crime, it logistically had to be in his neighborhood. I thought, here's the opportunity. I'm going to move him over to the FBI for a while and be able to explore crimes on a bigger scale. And I did that for 2 books, and then I kind of stopped. And I didn't really know. I knew that I didn't want to continue writing those FBI books because they're a lot of work. And I already had another series started with an FBI agent. So Kimo stewed around in the back of my mind for a while until someone sent me an article about a hula class at San Quentin Prison. Because hula is part of the Hawaiian native religion, they had an exemption. They're allowed to teach in the prisons about prisoners' religions. So they're teaching this hula class at San Quentin, which I thought was just fascinating.
Absolutely.
And so then I had this idea, what if a guy is trying to turn himself around? He's gone through this hula class at San Quentin. He's come back to Oahu to start life over again. And he's accused of a crime that he didn't commit. That was a chance for Kimo to jump in and go in and start investigating. When I didn't really know at the time what his position was going to be back in homicide. This was an opportunity to essentially operate as a private eye, that he, you know, knew some people who knew some people, and he could go around and investigate, and he's using the same techniques that he would as a homicide detective, just, and ultimately he is doing this undercover on behalf of his boss. But it was a way for me to segue him back into police work from coming back from the FBI.
Well, now, if I were asked Kimo about Neil Plaxey, what would he say?
Well, I've deliberately made Kimo a reader. He's an English major, partly because the English classes when he was in college were offered in the afternoon and he could go surfing in the morning. So he's a reader, and he reads gay detective mysteries. So I think he might know my name as a writer of gay mysteries.
If he has taste, he does.
Well, and he certainly knows Anthony Bedalka, because he – but this is where the fiction gets messy with the facts. He has run into and is – done a couple joint investigations with Russell Quant, who is Tony Bedalka's private Saskatchewan-based private eye. So Russell has come to Honolulu a couple of times, and he and Kimo have worked together, which was a great, fun thing to do. And really interesting to put myself in Tony's shoes in describing Russell, mm-hmm. and at the same time, thinking about how someone else would describe Kimo. So it's been a lot of fun as an experiment. And it ended up with Tony's book, Aloha Candy Hearts, and then a short story that I wrote, which is called Macadamia Nuts to You, because all of Tony's books have foods in their titles.
Well, that is a lot of fun to set that up that way. I've known a few other authors that did that. What more can you tell me about yourself? I'm going to throw that one just out there.
Okay. Well, you know, one of the things that I think is about me is that I love my dogs. And so when I met my then future husband, he had two dogs, a Yorkie and a Collie. And shortly after we moved in together, the Collie passed away and we got a golden retriever. And the Yorkie had already identified my husband as his human. So Sam, the golden, Sam Wise, who was my companion, bonded with me. And so I learned very quickly that a tired dog is a well-behaved dog. So Sam and I would go for long walks, 45 minutes in the morning and 45 minutes in the afternoon. Spent a lot of time playing with him. He had a lot of quirks. You know, if he didn't want to do something, he'd hide under the bed. He would put his paws over his face, assuming that if he couldn't see you, you couldn't see him. And so I just fell in love with Sam. And that's how I ended up beginning a different series of books, my Golden Retriever Mysteries. About a guy who adopts a golden and because his next door neighbor has been killed. And so he's asked to take in the dog for a short time. And then he and the dog go out and investigate why the dog's mom was killed. And in the course of that investigation, they bond. He falls in love with the dog. The dog falls in love with him. And my Sam passed away 7 years ago. Was replaced by two very rambunctious, wonderful Goldens named Brody and Griffin. But Sam still holds a special place in my heart. And this way he gets to live on in those Golden Retriever mysteries. So, you know, that's the thing that people often know most about me, is that I'm a dog lover.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up the Golden Retriever series, because I wanted to ask you about that and another series you have that's called Have Body Will Guard. They're both to me significantly different than the Mahu series. Can you tell us just a little bit about each of them?
Sure. So the Golden Retriever series is, they're all a little bit tongue in cheek. The titles all are puns on God phrases. So the first one is In Dog We Trust. So they're all puns like that. And so they're more lighthearted. They are amateur sleuth, and they take place in a small town in Pennsylvania, very much like the one where I grew up. And I'm delighted to keep writing them, because I observe my own dogs a lot and add those behaviors that I see into the books. But that was also my attempt to write a more mainstream series. As you probably know, and your listeners probably know, gay mystery is a niche market. And I hope that gradually we are reaching out to a larger audience, but the cozy mystery just by itself is a much bigger audience. And that was my experiment to try and reach out there. And that is my best-selling series, my most popular series. And I also get a lot of feedback from readers who love dogs and send me pictures of their dogs and interesting things their dogs have done. The Have Body Will Guard series was inspired by John Preston and his Alex Kane series. So if you don't know those books, they're a wonderful, maybe six of them that came out in the maybe the 70s or 80s from Allison Books. And Alex Kane is a Vietnam vet whose boyfriend has been killed by friendly fire in Vietnam. And the boyfriend's father then funds Alex to go out and champion the rights of LGBTQ people. And he becomes a kind of gay superhero who goes out and rescues people and saves people from oppression. And I wanted to carry on that work. So the bodyguards are Liam McCullough, who left the Navy as a Navy SEAL under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And he was greatly inspired by the books of Suzanne Brockman, who writes these wonderful, you know, adventurous gay romances, primarily straight romances, but there's a couple of gay characters who have their own happily ever after stories. So I knew SEALs were a trope, a thing that people were really hot for. And Liam is incredibly gorgeous. And he's working as a bodyguard in Tunis, the capital of Tunisia. And he is showering naked in his backyard when my other hero, who is a professor of English as a second language, who is fleeing a bad relationship, ends up in Tunis, spies this gorgeous guy showering naked. And that begins another 12-book series as they travel around the world, protecting gay people, facilitating romances between young gay men, and so on. And they're great fun to write. It's the first one I consider, if you want a log line for it or a quick line, it's a gay romancing the stone set in Tunisia. It's that kind of fun, sexy adventure.
I brought both of those up, and especially the Golden Retriever series, because I'm surprised you chose not to use a pseudonym for any of them. Have you ever worried you'll confuse your readers?
That's a really good question. First of all, I think readers are smart, and so they are sharp enough to read the product description. You know, if they're a fan of the Golden Retriever series and then they stumble on the Mahu series and they see, oh, it's about a gay surfing detective. Well, you know, if those three words don't really attract them. Mm-hmm. They just won't pick up the book and read it. And I, you know, and I have had fan mail from people who have said, you know, I love the Goldens. I'm just not interested in surfers or police procedurals or whatever. I'm like, that's okay. Honestly, Mahu was my first published book. And so I wanted it to come out under my real name. Had it been the other way around, you know, I had published some erotic fiction before that under a pseudonym. If I had come out with the Golden Retriever mysteries first, then maybe when I started to do the gay books, I would have said, just, you know, for different author branding to make it easier for readers. But I do have two different newsletters, and I try and calibrate the tone of those differently. That if I'm writing about the Golden, writing to my Golden newsletter fans, I'm talking a lot more about my dogs. If I'm writing about the gay mysteries, I might talk more about, you know, gay life and be, you know, and, oh, we, you know, we got married last summer and that kind of stuff.
Well, that sounds like smart marketing.
So, yeah, it's kind of, I'm stuck with it. That had I, were I going to do things differently, you know, had I had the opportunity, I probably would have switched them just to make it easier for readers. But at this point in my life, I'm like, I'm here, I'm queer, get over it.
There you go.
And it's funny because in the Golden Retriever books, the hero is straight. And I got a number of comments from fans saying, oh, you know, I didn't quite believe that he's straight because he's divorced and he's single at that point. because, you know, they knew that I, as the author, was a gay man. And so in book two, I deliberately gave him a girlfriend and, you know, have been in the background building up that relationship because I didn't want there to be that confusion.
Now, one of the big differences I want to talk about is between your Golden Retriever series and your Have Body Will Guard series. There's such a dramatic difference between them with, to me, Mahu in the middle. Your Have Body Will Guard series tends to be more sexual, and to put it bluntly, a good amount of fucking goes on.
Yes.
Or at least more than your other books.
That's because those books, the first book in particular, but then the next seven or eight in the series came out from Loose Id, which is a wonderful press run by four women. And it was particularly aimed at gay romance. And gay romance is a much bigger subgenre than gay adventure. Mm-hmm. And so I was always, I don't want to say cautioned or requested, but it was like, gee, you know, remember, we're marketing these as romance. There needs to be some sex going on. And, you know, and just from the way that I set the books up, you know, Liam is this gorgeous, you know, Michelangelo's David kind of a guy who isn't, you know, what you put a nice boyfriend in the mood in the room with him, of course they're going to have sex. And, you know, given how muscular he is, there's a lot of opportunity for different kinds of sex. And so what I've tried to do in the books is have the sex matter. So, you know, for example, in the first book, Three Wrong Turns in the Desert, they don't have anal sex until a fairly climactic time in the book. And so it is a gradual physical connection between them, as opposed to, you know, hey, you're really cute. Let me spread my legs for you. Jump in. I wanted to make it mean something in the course of the development of their relationship. And there's a new book in that series that just came out last week called The Madness of Husbands. And in it, Aiden's ex, the one who kicked him to the curb, you know, 10 books ago, shows up and needs his help. My husband is under threat. Can you please protect him? And there's a point in the book where the ex and his husband are having sex in the next room, And Aiden and Liam get a little turned on by, oh, that's your ex over there getting fucked, you know?
Yep.
So again, so then it, you know, it's not just sex for sex sake. It's sex because it has something else to say about the plot. And my editor was like, this is kind of creepy. Are you sure you want to do this? And I was like, oh, yes, I am absolutely sure. I want them to get turned on by hearing the couple in the next room, because they're not just a random couple. There's all these emotional tendrils between them.
Well, I think whether people want to admit it or not, hearing another couple in the next room is always a turn on.
And, you know, and I think there's that extra little bit of knowing who they are, mm-hmm. and knowing what they're doing, you know, kind of how, you know, you kind of like, how am I going to look this person in the eye, you know, the next morning, knowing what he says when?
Well, just say, hey, I hope you had a great time.
Yes.
Well,
or sounds like you had a great time.
Well, as far as your Have Body Will Guard series goes, I believe they are mysteries, but we did discuss this before, and you kind of just discussed it now. At what point do you think the sex pushes a novel from a mystery to the romance or erotic category?
That's a really good question, and I think it really depends upon the book and the author. And what I mean by that is, I fully believe that if you have a straight protagonist who lives in a, I don't want to say maybe darker, more realistic world, that person is going to have sex with his partner. And straight detectives have been doing that all these years. You know, certainly we have cozy mysteries, in which case there's no blood on the floor, there's no sex on the, you know, on the plate. But if I'm going to try and write in Dashiell Hammett's footsteps, for example, I'm not going to close the door on the sex just because, ooh, maybe some straight reader will be squeamish. Well, I know from straight readers telling me they just flip the page, whether it's gay sex or straight sex. If they don't like to read about sex, they just flip ahead until we get back to the mystery and they feel no better or worse about it. So I think as long as the sex is integral to the characters, and ideally has something to do with the development of the plot, then, you know, like the detective is so caught up in his work. He's got had his nose to the grindstone all week and hardly seen his partner, his husband. And then comes the weekend. They're going to get it on. And that's a symbol of, not a symbol, that's a consequence of the estrangement they've had during the week. And, oh, now you're back to me. I'm going to take advantage of it.
Yeah, and it's, you know, romance secondary arc is very common throughout mysteries throughout history.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And you know, the lovely ladies at Loose Id really were always on me to include either like a secondary romance arc. And so that's how quite often the bodyguard books have developed is, yes, they're protecting someone, maybe protecting a family, and the family happens to have a 20-something son who is in love. And how can they, you know, and maybe, you know, for example, in Under the Waterfall, which takes place in Corsica, that has a kind of Romeo and Juliet or Julio plot. The fathers of the two boys are mortal enemies. How can they protect the father from whoever is after him and protect the family while at the same time enabling the two boys to have their romance? So having that secondary arc enables me to put in sometimes more sex and romance when Aiden and Liam now have been together for 10 years. And, you know, they're not newlyweds. They've, you know, it's more fun sometimes to write a sex scene for them because they know what turns on each other. And they know if I do this, he'll do that. And so I know if I want to make him crazy, the thing I have to do is this. And so that's kind of fun to write because it shows off the depth of their relationship. So anytime that the sex can have multiple purposes, I'm happy to throw it in there.
And I don't disagree with that at all. I think because of this show, I've gotten this rep that I'm totally against sex in a novel. And I don't mind a hump or two or three throughout the book or, a blowjob here and there, as long as the focus of the story is on a mystery.
I agree. And I think sometimes what we'll see is gay romance books that are billed as mystery because there's some, plot going on, but really it's mostly about the sex or it's mostly about the romance. And there's the mystery is just a very casual subplot thrown in.
That's exactly, that's where I feel it's misleading and a book should just be classified appropriately.
Yeah, exactly. And when I have to go in, for example, when I put it in the bodyguard books into the BISAC code, these codes that tell a bookseller what genre a book is, I'll put in adventure and then gay fiction. Those are the two. Mm-hmm. Rather than losing, adventure to romance, because I feel like they are more about adventure and they're more about this kind of wish fulfillment. Oh, I wish there had been a big, strong, handsome seal to come in and, save me when I was in trouble.
I agree with you 100%. Now is the time.
Ooh, do you get to spin? You're going to spin the wheel for me?
I've been waiting for this. Yes, I know you have. This is awkward questions that writers get. So just relax for a moment while I spin the wheel.
Okay.
Okay, got one for you here.
Good.
Here we go. Are your books any good?
I think, if somebody asks me that question, I would answer, that depends on the reader. I feel like I tell a good story. Whether you think it's good is based on your own tastes, your own mood at the time, your familiarity with kind of books. But I hope that if you do give one of my books a try, you will think that it's good.
I think that's an excellent answer.
And can I throw in my favorite weird question that I've ever gotten?
Sure. Maybe I'll add it to my list.
Well, I don't know. is your hero circumcised?
Oh, I think I read that you had been asked that question.
I have been asked that question, and it really made me stop and think because this is the Mahu series, and I was only a couple books in at the time. And so I had to go back and research. I'm Jewish, so, no question about my situation.
Right.
But Kimo being Hawaiian, what were the percentage of boys born in his year in Oahu who were circumcised? And the general answer is that, most boys of his generation were. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. And then when I started writing the Bodyguard series, that question was in the front of my head. And so Liam McCullough is not. And Aiden Green, who is Jewish, is. And so we get a little bit of docking action going on there, too, which I thought was really a fun, again, another little bit of sex, trying to do something differently and yet realistically.
Well, I think it's fun that you actually went and researched the answer for that individual.
Yeah. And it was fun. It was, it was interesting research. Let's put it that way.
I can imagine.
I mean, and I think everybody has gone through, once we had the internet, every gay man at least has gone through that what's the average penis size? You know, where's that? Well, there must be, because there's all kinds of data, you know, on the internet. So it's that kind of fun research.
Well, if you go by the pictures, they're all 12 inches.
Yeah. Or by the dildos that are, you know, based on porn stars.
Exactly. So if I want to purchase Deadly Labors, or what was the other book that you mentioned?
The newest one that just came out is called The Madness of Husbands. And all my books are what we call wide, which is they're available on all platforms, Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble, Apple, and even many of these smaller ones in other countries.
So pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, pretty much everywhere. Just Google, you know, use. I'm fortunate in that even though my grandfather was one of 12 children, my last name is dying out in my generation. So if you Google Plaxi and you spell it correctly, you get me. And maybe, you know, down the road a little bit, one reference to my cousin Steve and one to my cousin Larry. That's it.
Well, that does make it easy to find you.
Yes.
So now, if a reader wants to, or a listener wants to get a hold of you, what is the best way for them to do that?
Just go right to my website, which is mahubooks.com, and there's a contact me link right at the bottom of the page that will send me an email, and I will write back because I love hearing from people.
Yeah, it's always good to hear from the reader, good or bad. It's good to know that they care.
In the end, we're all readers too. And so I love hearing from somebody who has read my books, but then has also said, hey, have you also read X? And I love getting pictures of people's dogs, too.
Well, I can imagine. You definitely sound like a dog runner lover. And you mentioned that your golden retrievers are rambunctious. It's very rare to find one that's not rambunctious.
Yes. Yes.
And a young one that loves to chew.
Yeah. My husband is constantly saying, Brody, chew on the other side of your mouth, because he's already broken a tooth.
Oh, no.
I don't know that Brody listens, but... You know, I don't listen to him either, so.
Well, I want to thank you for being on the show. We touched on a topic that I've been looking forward to getting into a little bit, and it's been a pleasure getting to know you.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on as a guest. It's been a real pleasure, and I've been listening to your podcast since it came out. And so I've learned a tremendous amount about other gay mystery authors. So I've been trying to push this podcast wherever I can.
Well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. And I saw the review you did for us on Apple on Christmas Day. That's a very nice Christmas present.
Well, and that's what I figured. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts. And so that was my little good deed for the day, was to give little Christmas presents to the podcasters who brought me such wonderful information.
Well, thank you very much again for doing so. And I hope to have you back the next book that you have up.
Great.